track record, and he does not have a real good track record. As far as my prediction, it's only an educated guess, but I don't think they are going to find collusion with Russia, frankly, just because there's no evidence of that. There
yeah,
really
I don't think
not.
They are. And
he's
I think everyone having us bet on that, it's not gonna. That's not going to take Trump down.
The media did that. And, you know, I've got my fingers crossed that he won't go that far as the media has done making this stuff up. But on the other hand, he has done what I find very objectionable is he's used a certain kinds of entrapment and lying to the FBI tactics in order to try to move up the chain. And by the way, lying to the FBI was never even prosecuted when I worked. It was almost never prosecuted.
Well, and frankly, Abrams lied to Congress, and he and he's still up there. He's still in Congress. They're sending him to Venezuela. The tobacco companies lied to Congress, and they're walking away as well, and so did many people about the war in Iraq. So I think that they selectively choose who they want to take that lying to Congress about.
Corruption in Washington, D.C. is quite bad now. I know we'd like to think differently, but if they went after people for failure to register, so many of our revolving door politicians were violating FARA. But, you know, that's the problem. This is selective and it's political. And Robert Mueller, he's been around the block.
Well, thank you for all of that. I think we need to end our program right now. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO's International Women's Day. And we've been talking with Colleen Rowley, former special agent and legal counsel for the FBI and a 9/11 whistleblower. She won the Person of the Year Award of Time Magazine in 2002 for that action. Thank you very much, Colleen.
Yes, thank you, too.
And now we go on to more KBOO International Women's Day programming.
For International Women's Day here on KBOO, I thought I would talk to one of the most visible women in Portland, Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. I'm Jenny Okuyama, KBOO's current AM News and Public Affairs Director. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. Commissioner Hardesty and I recently sat down to talk about what her experience of being a woman on City Council and in the political scene has been like.
Do you feel that your gender has affected your experience in politics, and how?
Oh, definitely. No question that my gender has impacted my experience in politics. I remember way back when I was considering running for the state legislature, and there weren't any long-term programs that were specific to women running, at least at the local level. You know, Emily's List was around, but there were no local groups that were actually working with women to help them run. WinPAC was around, but there were very few groups. And I remember going to a training, and basically having a white woman tell me that I needed to straighten my hair, stop wearing ethnic jewelry, I should wear pantsuits. If I needed a spokesperson for police accountability, then I should get a retired white cop to be my spokesperson. And, you know, I looked at her and I went, you know, if I did all that, who would I be, right? I wouldn't recognize me. So if I didn't recognize me, how would the public recognize me, right? And so I think we've evolved a bit, but not so much, because we see what happened to Hillary Clinton when she ran, right? When women run for office, we the public tends to focus on what her hair looks like, what her clothes look like, whether or not her top is low cut or not. I mean, you know, very superficial things, right? So when men run, it's all about, okay, so what are you going to do, right? And so women have to get over that barrier from the beginning, right? They have to figure out whether they're going to take the political smart people's input and actually change themselves to reflect something that's not real, or if they're just going to be who they are. And man, has politics changed a lot. Because from the time I ran the first time to what I saw happening all over the country in the last election cycle, I think women have gotten over that. Like, how do I need to look? How do I need to be? They're just like, hey, here I am. Take it or leave it. You know, hey, this is what I bring, and you either want it or you don't. So I'm happy to say that the evolution over the last 30 years has been pretty phenomenal.
So it sounds like it's changed, but is it necessarily any easier, do you feel?
Oh, absolutely not easier. I mean, women still have the barrier of having access to big money, right? Because it's always about who raises the most money wins, unless you're me, and then who does the best organizing job, they win, right? But most women are still impacted by the fact that they just don't have the relationships with the moneyed interest in town. Money interests don't traditionally seek out women who are running for public office. I certainly know that I talk to a lot of downtown white men who just thought I was too radical, wouldn't play nice with others. And only because I'm straightforward and I don't have a lot of time to be like sugarcoating things, right? We got problems, let's fix them. And so I think, yeah, women definitely are still impacted, but it's not as unusual. And I don't want to forget that I'm only the 9th woman to serve on the Portland City Council in its 168-year history. And so, and of course, the first Black woman to serve on Portland City Council. So traditionally still, right, if you look at history, Portland City Council is white men from moneyed interests who have deep connections downtown.
And there's 3 on the council right now.
Yes. But what's interesting is all 3 of us took non-traditional routes to City Hall. Amanda Fritz was first elected with voter-owned elections, which is the public finance system that we had in place a decade ago when she ran for the first time. Chloe had a very grassroots campaign, and she had she also had that people really disliked the person that was running for re-election, but she also really was focused on one of the core issues at the time, which was housing. And as a single mom with a disabled child, she made really compelling argument. And again, neither of them had big money, neither of them really had access to the power elite in the city of Portland. And so I think what the city council now reflects is that women who take a different route to City Hall are more grounded because they actually are responsive to regular people, right? As compared to, I got this money from this corporation or this builder or this developer, right? And so I know that, so it's interesting to see that all 3 of the women took a different route, but the 2 men took the traditional route to City Hall.
So now that we have 3 women on City Council right now, do you feel that there is a change, whether it's just in the general atmosphere on the City Council or actual policy change that we see as a result of having, you know, these 3 people who, as you said, have taken a pretty non-traditional route to getting to their seats?
I've been here 9 weeks now, and there have been times that Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fritz and I have joined forces, and it was a 3-2 vote. And the Portland Joint Tourism Task Force is a great example of that. But there have also been times since I've been here that either Commissioner Fritz or Commissioner Udaly disagreed with a proposal that I had. A great example was the unenforced masonry vote to slow it down that I took last week. And Commissioner Nick Fish voted with Commissioner Udaly and I to slow that process down. Commissioner Fritz felt like, no, it's the least we could do is like put the notifications up. And so what I love is that we still will have differences of opinions, but we don't spend a lot of time where we differ. We spend much more time in what can we do together? What can we do collaboratively? And I think women just automatically do that because women are used to working in partnership. They're used to working in collaboration. And one of the things I learned early in politics is that if you don't care who gets the credit, you can do great things, right? And I think women are more prone to like step back and allow other people to suck the air out of the room if they want to. But I don't suspect that we're always going to be in lockstep because we all have totally different lived experiences. But I have found it so valuable. Like last week, my fire bureau is one of the bureaus that I'm responsible for, and we want to start charging for like nursing homes who call the fire department every time somebody falls because they're understaffed and they haven't trained people how to pick people up who have fell, but yet they're being paid to provide that service. And so my bureau said, you know, we just can't be a private lift service for these private care facilities. And it could have been on the consent agenda, which means we would have had no conversation about it. It would have just been, people would have said yes or no, and the way it went. I decided to pull it off the consent agenda because, in my mind, that was worth the public dialogue, right? And I knew that if the public read in the newspaper, fire department charging for services, right, that there would be an uproar, right? So I wanted to take the time, slow it down, take the time, and let's have a conversation about it. Well, Amanda Fritz is a psychiatric nurse, and Chloe Udaly has a son who's disabled that she's had real lived experience in trying to lift a child who is not mobile, right? And so we had a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And I don't think we would have had that conversation had there not been three women who came to it from totally different perspectives. And for me, I just came to it as, this is a public policy that people will want to know about, so we should have the public dialogue. But the expertise of my other female colleagues just made the conversation so much more rounder, and I think we came up with a better public policy because of their input and the fact that I wasn't rushing to get it through, that I thought enough about it to know that people will have questions, and so we should put the answers on the bucket right now, right? And so I see more and more and more of that taking place.
I guess you kind of answered my second question with, like, what are the strengths that come with being a woman
Yes.
on city council? So my third question is, what advice do you have for women or femme-identifying people mm-hmm. who are interested in getting involved in government? And as you said, we've seen so many more women get involved as a result of the 2016 election and so many more people being inspired by the women they're seeing right now.
Yes.
So people who are maybe stepping into this, what beginning advice would you have for people?
I would encourage them to volunteer. Volunteer for someone that you admire, right? Get your foot wet. Serve on a committee, a board, or a commission. Do something in your community that drives your passion, right? Because none of us will know everything about everything. But whatever it is you know, whatever your niche is, be really, really good at it and inspire people, right? One of the things that shocked me when I ran was how many people I had known and a whole lot of different avenues in Portland, Oregon, right? I mean, as a legislator, as someone who ran a community nonprofit, when I ran Oregon Action, KBOO, and so when I put the call out, hey, need volunteers, right? It was amazing how many people showed up, right? And it wasn't because I was thinking back then I was going to run for city council, because I was done with public office. I served in the legislature. That was cool. I'm done with that, right? But anger motivated me to run. I just kept thinking, we've got to be able to do better. We've got to be able to do better. It just didn't feel like people were even listening to the pain that people were suffering on our street, right? And that was my motivation to run. And then what I realized was all the work I'd done for the last 30 years, people remembered, right? And so I tell people that all the time. Be nice to everybody, because people remember how you made them feel. They don't even remember what project you worked on. They can't even tell you what year it was, but they remember if you made them feel good about volunteering their time. And so when you decide to run, if you don't have a bucket load of money, you should have a bucket load of people, right, that are willing to go out and work hundreds of hours to get you elected. And that was my secret weapon, right? I knew enough people from different walks of life in Portland, and they were willing to do what it took to get me elected.
You know, we look at you now and we say, oh, of course Joanne's on city council. Obviously, that history that you're talking about,
yes.
It seems like a logical progression, but I kind of wonder if say 10-year-old Joanne could look at you now, would she say, oh yeah, that makes so much sense, or would who you are today, would this surprise her that you are involved in politics?
She would be shocked. She would be absolutely shocked. When I worked for Bev Stein, I had the pleasure of working for Bev Stein back in the early 90s, and she was the very first politician I worked for. And I did not trust politicians. I did not believe that they could tell the truth more than once in a day. She was the one that really inspired me. And she inspired me because she said the same thing no matter what side of town she was on. And when I first went to work for her, I would slip out in the audience. I would look at her calendar and see where she was speaking. And I would just be slipping the back of the audience in Southwest and then in Northeast and then in North Portland. And she was very consistent. And she was someone that was very clear that she didn't have to have all the answers. But if she didn't know, she would put together a group of people. And just how she put them together would be the most diverse group of people you could imagine, right? How many times today do you hear people struggling like, oh, we need people of color. They put a committee together and they look around and they go, oh, wait, we need people of color. Who do you know, right? And so we get the same one or two people that are on every board and commission and committee that exists. And so once I realized that, wow, you can be an elected official, you can speak truth, and you can speak that truth no matter what side of town you're on, right? She became my model. I was like, if I had not worked for her, I would have never run for the legislature, because I would have just thought all politicians are sleazy, and who wants to be a part of that? True story. And I know my parents are both deceased now, but they would be losing their mind. But my daughter's on the city council? How is that even possible, right? Like, they drove my siblings crazy when I was elected to the legislature, so I could just imagine on the city council. They would be loving it. But again, it just goes to show, and I tell people, my route is not a traditional route to City Hall, and so people shouldn't assume that there's like a cookie-cutter approach to how you get here. And in fact, all the women got here through very non-traditional routes. So I would say, if it's in your heart, and I think if you're doing it for the right reasons, I think people know when you're doing it because you want a job, or if you're doing it because you actually believe that you can add value and you can do something good for the people. I think that people really had that clear choice in my general election last year, right? So
maybe surprise yourself. I'm wondering, you've only been here for 9 weeks.
Right.
Is there anything about the job so far that has surprised you, just generally, about working in City Hall?
Well, two surprises. So before I was even sworn in, I get my iPhone and I get my Dell computer. I didn't know Dell still made computers. I thought we had moved well beyond Dell. But come to find out, that seems to be standard issue in government, right? Because I complained about that big time. And I went, no, I think I'll get a Surface. Thank you. I'm just not going to go back to the Dell. But everybody has Dells, right? So that was a big surprise. And then I think the second surprise is how long it takes to do things in the city of Portland, right? It absolutely is mind-boggling. A great example, we're in a housing emergency. But it takes longer today to divide up a piece of land if you wanted to do a fourplex on a lot. It takes longer today to do that than it did before the housing emergency was declared 5 years ago, right? And so some things just don't appear to be logical. And I think it's because people have learned to cover their butt, right? So it's like everybody's in charge, which means nobody's in charge, right? Which means that everybody's waiting for somebody to tell them this is the right thing to do. My philosophy is we will make mistakes. I mean, if you're being innovative, if you're being creative, you're going to make mistakes, and mistakes should be okay, right? people shouldn't lose their jobs because they made mistakes. They should lose their job because they're not trying to do enough, right? They're not, like, you know, trying to be visionary about, wow, like, what, in an emergency, what should we be doing? Because I say, you know, no, most of the time when an emergency is declared, you see the Red Cross with tents set up, you see triage centers set up, you see experts coming in to figure out how do we best resolve this emergency, and we seem to be acting like, oh, it's all good, we'll get to it, right? We're gonna, as long as we build 200 houses a year, we'll be good, right? Well, we got thousands of people on our street, right? So yeah, to me it's just mind-boggling how long it takes to do things. I'd just rather do it and then ask forgiveness rather than just like go through all the long, long time and all the buy-in that you have to get, right? So I think that's different. I think another thing that's different is the way I've set up my office is probably different than any other city council office. For example, I have a budget analyst with 10 years of budget experience at the City of Portland, and so I'm very intentional about following the money in city budgets. We have a $6 billion budget, so I don't think that they expect commission officers to be as thorough with the budget as my office will be. The other thing is I have a lawyer on staff because I tend to disagree with the city attorneys on a regular basis, so I always want to have a second or third opinion available when they give legal opinions, because many times I think their legal opinions are based on being suit averse, even though the city gets sued all the time, right? And so I think legal opinions should be based on what is the law and what is it that you're trying to do, and how do you do what you're trying to do legally within the law, right? It should not be, well, we're really, really scared of everything, so let's just like not be innovative or creative, or let's not push the envelope. I want to push it all the way to the edge, so. And maybe even over a little bit, just depends on what we're working on.
A humanizing question.
Okay.
Okay, so when you're not busy saving the world and doing a thousand things, Joanna, what is it that you do, you know, the self-care or the relaxing?
Yes,
is there,
yes,
are there,
yes,
the little treats that you have to do just to ground yourself to be Joanne for a moment?
Yes, so the little treats are getting my nails did. When I ever look down at my nails and they look bad, I know that I'm not doing self-care. So I have to have my nails looking good, and blue has become my go-to color. And then massages, I'm getting into massages. And then the third thing is when I get to totally disconnect, travel. I have this travel bug. I always want to go somewhere. I always want to be on the plane. Went to Brazil after the election for 3 weeks. That was absolutely fabulous.
I'm so grateful for you with your time here on City Council. It's only been a couple months, but it's so exciting every time to see you sitting up there and just first Black woman up there. It's, I can't even imagine what that's like for you. I mean, do you feel that impact? Do you?
Some days I feel the historic nature of it all, right? Because I'm not unaware that there are Black and brown girls that are coming to the city council for the first time, or watching the city council deliberations, and they are for the first time having this image in their head. And I love telling them, especially when they're like 6, 7, 8 years old, that I'm just holding the seat for you, so you hurry up and get out of school so I can give it to you, okay? Right? And their eyes just get big and bright because somebody should be planting that seed, right? Why shouldn't they at 7, 8 years old think I should run and serve in public office, right? It's an honor to serve in public office. And some days I'm very mindful that being the first is hard, right? But once you open that door, it's wide open for the next folks that come in, right? And what I love is, you know, I am the person I was when I moved here, January 1st, 1990. So my hair hasn't changed, my style hasn't changed, and I didn't incorporate that I had to try to look like somebody that I wasn't in order to be accepted and elected to public office. I think that's key for women. You just have to just be comfortable with who you are, and not, because other people will try to tell you who you are. You just have to be comfortable with who you are, and just know that you are right just the way you are, right? weird hair and all. You're just fine. Bye.
That was Commissioner Joanne Hardesty speaking to me from City Hall about her experience of being a woman in politics. Not so much a fan of politics, but a fan of radio, and you recognize Joanne's voice. She, of course, is the host of Voices from the Edge here on KBOO Community Radio. You can listen to that every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. For KBOO Community Radio, I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Thanks for joining me.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er.
And we'll hear a bit more of that later. For now, some important announcements from in and around your community, followed by The Digital Divide, with your host Rabia Yeaman speaking with Elizabeth Fournier. So stay tuned right here to KBOO Portland, your community radio, with 24 hours of program focusing on the travails and accomplishments of women here across the country and around the world.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
The KBOO Evening News produces a nightly one-hour newscast every weekday night. We need writers, editors, reporters, and more to make this grassroots community resource happen. Are you interested? Would you like to try something exciting? Training in writing for radio, interviewing, field recording, and audio editing is all free of charge. But you have to go through the KBOO volunteer orientation first. For more information, email newsdirector@kboo.org.
L'amour, encore l'amour, toujours l'amour.
That's Christine Pilzer. I-M-O-R-L. From out of Paris, France. From the Ultra Chicks Volume 1, Fille et la Garage. You can find more of that on the Garage Punk 60s Girls Band Music Compilation, Ultra Chicks Volume 1, Fille et la Garage. It's 10:59 on KBOO Portland. And how are we able to bring you 24 hours of programming focusing on the particular travails and accomplishments and victories and sorrows and joys of women across the country and around the world? It's because of the support of our community. That's you, the listener, and many other members of our community who get involved to the extent and in the manner that makes sense for them. One such community member I'm pleased, honored, as well as contractually obligated to remind you about. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listeners, members, and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning. Scholarships and other tuition opportunities available. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com. Now, I had promised you some digital divide, and here it is.